Hello and welcome to this edition of the Golf Channel Podcast with Rex and Lav. We are indeed back in the lab. Wish we had a better story to tell you as to why we not record a podcast on Sunday night, like Rex getting detained at the Canadian border. Unfortunately, it instead was just some travel logistics following the RBC Canadian Open. And then on Monday, some Wi-Fi connectivity issues at golf's longest day. Rex, speaking of which, how was your U.S. Open final qualifier north of the border?
Mine was clean. I know you had to go back and do some retaping of some stuff, and I want to ask you about that. But we had very rarely, like I was watching you do this all day long. You're watching the leaderboards, and I had seven spots. So it was about 66 players for seven spots. And all day long, it was exactly seven players. And I'm like, yeah, there's no way. Like at the end of the day, something crazy is going to happen, and we'll have a 5-for-1 playoff that never stops into the dark. But it came down to essentially the last hole, last group on the last hole. Aaron Rye needed to get up and down just for par at the last hole. He was long of the green on the par five. And here's a good journalistic question for you, because this is the first time this has ever happened. Granted, a little bit different scenario than what we run into at a PGA Tour event. As we are watching Aaron Rye, because the group before him with Keith Mitchell, and Keith Mitchell needed to make birdie, did not make birdie. And so essentially Aaron Rye now he's long in two. He can essentially chip onto the green, two putt advance. Aaron was lining up his putt, and his caddy's looking around and panicky, runs over to me and asks, what do I need to do? And what do we need to do? And I told him, but then I thought, there was a part of me that thought, what if I get it wrong? What if the math is wrong? What if the leaderboards are off? Like there was a moment of panic there. I mean, it was a good 60 seconds where I was just praying, please, whatever you do, don't make a mess of this hole. He ended up making birdie. It was fine.
I mean, players, caddies, officials are inputting the scores. There is some user error. And if you're tracking the leaderboard all day, you'll see scores change all day long because, again, it is user error. I would have deferred to the rules official in that scenario. But, hey, you do you. It ended up being
no one around.
A moot point.
Yeah, no one around. But I do love that day. I mean, you and I both have talked about this before, and it wasn't quite as long. I felt like as it has been in the past, we didn't quite have the morning shows. We at our site didn't go as deep. I didn't feel like we had as many playoffs this year, just listening to the coverage as the day went by. But there's still such awesome stories from every site. And my site was a little bit of an anomaly on this day. And that came easy for me because my site had most of the PGA Tour pros. It was flipped around this year. It's usually in Ohio. Right after the Memorial, this is where all the players just decide, okay, this is what I'm going to try to qualify. This year was different. It was after the Canadian Open. Most of the players who were playing the Memorial are probably in the U.S. Open. So that site didn't have nearly as many. It felt a little different to me, but it was enjoyable.
Yeah, you had a bunch of PGA Tour players. I was in Georgia, and it felt like it was a who's who of college, amateur, or recently turned pro type players in the field. And that to me can be a little bit underwhelming too, and can be a little bit of a bummer because for those types of players, it feels like it's their birthright to play at a U.S. Open. I mean, they've been so good for so long. Most of them were standout junior players. Almost all of them were standout college players. Like it just seems like a natural progression. And that's no offense to the players who did get through. And we had Jackson Buchanan, who was the Big Ten player of the year at Illinois. Phenomenal player, seems to have a very bright future. Freddie Ketrup, who just finished up his college career at Florida State, lost the NCAA championship. Like, those are very good players. Freddie's going to be conditional status in the Corn Ferry Tour for the rest of the summer. That's great. Chris Peatfish is a Corn Ferry Tour player right now. Like, those are my three guys. And I mentioned this on Golf Today when I did the roundtable with T. Lou on Tuesday. You may not know this about me, Rex, but I'm a very competitive person. And I want to have at my site the biggest drama, the best interview, the most viral moment. And we just didn't have any. And I equated it to essentially like playing in the Super Bowl. And for Golf Channel, Golf's Longest Day presented by Titleist is our Super Bowl. We're on the air for almost 12 consecutive hours. Like it's a really big deal with tens, if not 100 or 200 people all involved in this process. It is a very big deal, but it's like being in the Super Bowl and not breaking a sweat or not getting your jersey dirty. Like I think they ran our recap like once or twice in the evening show because he's just like, like two really good amateur players, as well as Chris Petefish, a Korn Ferry Tour player, shrug and move on. It was, you know, Todd Lewis's sight with Justin Lauer, a very emotional interview. His father died when he was a teenager. Now the prospect of playing a U.S. Open on Father's Day was obviously hugely meaningful to him. Kira K. Dixon in San Francisco, the story of John Chin, who'd been grinding forever. And now he said, it's about damn time that he finally played in a major championship. Like those are great, but I'm with you. I still love the day. Even if our respective sites don't necessarily deliver the best drama, the actual idea of golf's longest day is undefeated. And there's just so much potential there.
Yeah, it's the meritocracy of it. It's what makes that day so special. If you want to play in the U.S. Open Championship, you and I could take our chances. And if we're good enough, we're going to make it through. To pull back the curtain here a little bit, to your point that we're all a little competitive. So for years, you and me, and I don't think Todd Lewis is in on this bet, but Steve Borkowski, our colleague, is, where we want someone, we want the emotional moment. We want someone to cry. Essentially, while we're doing the interview, I had no chance whatsoever. I'm looking up and down my leaderboard, and I love Mark Hubbard. He's one of my favorite players to talk to on the PGA Tour. He was not going to break down in tears because he qualified for the U.S. Open. My only chance was we actually had a Canadian amateur, Ashton McCullough, who qualified, and I didn't know him. I hadn't interviewed him, but I was doing, you know, the, oh, this is my chance. I'm going to make this happen. No chance. He walked up with a beer in his hand. He was very relaxed. He had a big smile on his face. He was very relieved. He said he played in his first PGA Tour event last week at the Canadian Open. He didn't think now he's going to play in
A tournament you were covering. You never heard of him.
I mean, I had no chance whatsoever. And then I'm watching you because I'm like, well, as long as I don't lose to Lav, and you didn't do it either.
I got pretty excited. So Chris Petefish, he rolled in like a 30-footer on his last hole of day.
Is that someone's name, or are you making that up?
That's his name. He went over to the side of the green, and he crouched down and was kind of like looking at the ground. I was like, oh, yeah, here we go. And then the family members, his mom, his fiance is getting married later this month. I believe that was his father-in-law. Like, they were all very emotional behind the green. So I'm sending John Bender, our cameraman, like, shoot that. Like, we had so much potential. He ended up running out of battery. So we did not even get any of that on television. And then when I interviewed him afterward, I was like, so what? Can you take us through your emotions? What were you processing there on the edge of the green? He's like, yeah, I was just really tired. I was like, oh, there's no emotion about finally playing your first U.S. Open at age 29. He's like, no, I'm really tired. Didn't even think I could play today because I had a fever yesterday. I was like, oh, okay then.
Okay.
So no, I did not win that bet. We're already moving on to 2025. Hopefully we get a little bit more drama. It was essentially just top amateurs for me or players who are a little bit long in the tooth, but certainly at age 29, it's not like he's past his prime in any sense. You were covering Rex Golf's longest day immediately following the RBC Canadian Open. We had a very good winner on Sunday in Bobby Mack, and we don't need to get into that at this point since we did not record on Sunday. It's 3 days old. I think the one surprise in an area of discussion as it pertains to Bobby McIntyre is the fact that he is skipping this week's Memorial Tournament. He kind of alluded to it in the post-run interview with Amanda Baliones that he was going to go home to Scotland and party. If that is indeed what he is going to do, do you have any issue that he is not going to be playing in the signature event ahead of next week's U.S. Open?
No, not at all. And I thought that was a ridiculous conversation that you guys had on Golf Today about this yesterday. And I was texting you as I was at 30,000 feet. Like, what is Todd saying? Like, what is he saying? Like, this is ridiculous. No. And the reason is, well, a couple reasons. One, I talked to a lot of players last week. I'm working on a project, a June 6th project that's going to come out tomorrow. I talked to a lot of star players who are in those fields. Rory, for example. Everyone's exhausted, man. And I know what there are going to be those who are going to roll their eyes at the idea that, oh, you're exhausted because you have to play golf. No, it's draining. I had a very long conversation with your boy, Matt McNeely, who is quickly becoming my boy because I love having these long conversations with him. And he was just pointing out how this year's schedule, more than any time in the history of the PGA Tour, forces your hand. And not just your players outside the top 50 or the top 70, those who aren't in the signature events, it forces everybody's hands. Rory McIlroy, the Canadian Open was the start of four in a row. And it's the same stretch that he had going into the Masters. It's essentially the same stretch he had going into the PGA Championship. Matt McNeely was, I think this was 5 out of 6 weeks for him. Because if you're not in the signature events, you essentially have to stay on the merry-go-round and you have to keep trying to get in through that Aeon swing. And if you are lucky enough, if you do play well enough and you get in, then you play in the signature, one or two signature events, and then you have to start it all over again. So those who are outside that magic bubble are already on the treadmill. Like, there is no stopping for them. And even the star players who are, in this case, Bobby McIntyre, he made the choice. Like, I would rather not do this. This is the start of a very long stretch. I always thought, when I looked at this portion of the schedule, and I'm talking about Memorial, U.S. Open, Travelers being a signature event, that one of those two signature events was going to suffer because guys just aren't going to do three in a row after what they've already done this year. And I think Bobby Mack is a perfect example of that. I can tell you that in life, but certainly in golf, more is not more. More is often less when it comes to golf. Very rarely do you see the player that this is my 8th week in a row. I knew something was going to happen and it did. It was magic. Very rarely do you have that conversation. When you're tired, when you're mentally frustrated, when the swing's just not there, when you're searching, that's not the time something special happens. And I'm not saying go home and take 6 weeks off, but you certainly need a few days to recharge. And in Bobby's case, a few days to party, like he deserves to party because that was a really cool victory.
So when I was doing this roundtable with Todd Lewis, ridiculous, and T. Lou was going on, I'm sitting in my chair like ready to pounce. And I was unable to defend myself because I made the argument first that I understand it on a lot of levels. And I went into that and I will do it here as well. T. Lou's counter to that was no, this is a huge risk for Bobby McIntyre. He's 32nd on the FedEx Cup points list. These are guaranteed FedEx Cup points. He's going to play the U.S. Open and he appears to be in good form. He's going to play in the Travelers Championship, a signature event as well. He needs to make sure that he gets the Tour Championship in Eastlake to protect his standing and to make sure he's part of that signature event series in 2025. What I would have said had I got an opportunity to get in there is, T. Lou, the Memorial Tournament would have been 6 events in a row for Bobby McIntyre. Playing the U.S. Open, that's 7. The Travelers Championship, another signature event, another event in the PGA Tour schedule that you would want to be playing in because it's guaranteed points again, would have been 8 in a row. That is not a recipe for success to play on the PGA Tour. 8 consecutive weeks, especially in a couple weeks' time, he'd be playing the Scottish Open, which he almost won last year, got nipped by Rory McIlroy at the end, and then the Open Championship. Again, this is a guy who's playing exceedingly well and you would think would have an opportunity to win at Royal Troon this year. That doesn't even, like, those are the practical reasons why it does not make sense for Robert McIntyre to play this week. That doesn't even, that totally discounts the personal element where he has been incredibly open this year about his homesickness, about how lonely he was. He's brought sort of pieces of home with him over the past month, whether it was his mom coming to the PGA Championship and giving him some home cooking, ended up finishing a top 10 for the first time in his major championship career at the PGA Championship, brought his dad on the bag, the RBC Canadian Open, wins his first PGA Tour event. Like, he has earned this trip home. He wants and needs to savor this accomplishment. He has different priorities, it appears, than what Todd Lewis wants him to have. You know, not every PGA Tour player is wired to want to be the FedEx Cup champion, be a top 5 player of the world, top 10, make it to Eastlake, whatever the case may be. I think Robert McIntyre deserved this break, and now having the security of a 2-year exemption on the PGA Tour, having more money in the bank, he can go pay off his parents' mortgage. It allows him to take a little bit of a breather. Every player is wired differently. I certainly understood it on a lot of levels, and I would push back against the narrative that this is a huge risk career-wise for him, because if he plays this week and plays terrible anyway, he's earning a scant amount of points. Yeah. In the FedEx Cup race, and it could eventually, in like that extra golf, could actually affect him come FedEx Cup playoff time, which was Todd Lewis's point that you're trying to peak for.
Yeah, if you're Bobby McIntyre, do you want to win the Memorial now, or do you want to win the U.S. Open? No offense to Jack Nicklaus, the Memorial.
He's not going to win the Memorial because he's dog tired.
Yeah. Like, I mean, you just have to look at it at a granular level. Now, this take is going to come back and bite me for a little bit if close observers are going to point out that I'm the one that argued for Nick Dunlap to immediately turn pro as soon as he won the American
Express. Different story. Different
story. That was an entirely different story. I was talking about him taking advantage of this opportunity over an entire season. I'm not talking about a one-off where he's playing 6 weeks in a row, but oh, this is a big event, no cut, big point. No,
entirely different case.
That's not what I was trying to get to. And I didn't understand Todd's point. There are a lot of things that come from qualifying for the Tour Championship. Making it to East Lake, you can essentially kind of pin your own schedule as far as the majors go. But as far as everything else, the signature events, the Players' Championship, any other event outside of the majors that you want to play in, that's top 50. And he's already pretty much locked that up. So you start looking ahead, and there was no reason for him to play other than, oh, okay, maybe he could win. That wasn't going to happen, to your point, because he's exhausted. And you've worked your entire life for this. It was a very
Savor it.
Make the most of it. Like, I think that's the one thing in golf that's good and bad. One, if you have a bad week, you can just get on the plane and fly to the next tournament and just pick up where you left off. It was like a reset. Every Monday brings you something new. The other half of it is, though, if you do have success, if you have waited for this, and as you pointed out, like he's talked about how this has been so difficult on him, make the most of the moment.
You are not covering the Memorial this week, probably for the first time in a long time. One of my favorite regular season tournaments of the year. No Bobby Mack in the field, but basically everyone else who matters on the PGA Tour. Led, of course, by Scottie Scheffler, his first tournament being played since the charges were dropped, stemming from his arrest at the PGA Championship. Rory McIlroy, after a top five finish last week in Canada. Kyle Morikawa, continuing his good run of form. And the PGA champion, Xander Schauffele, making his first start since Valhalla. What has caught your eye this week, Rex, as we look forward to Muirfield Village?
To watch Scotty. Like we've talked about it at length, about let's see where he is now with this quote-unquote all behind him, with all of the nonsense, all of the distractions of what happened at Valhalla behind him. Is he going to be Scottie Scheffler? Is he going to be the guy that had won four or five starts going into the PGA Championship, the dominant player that we all expected him to be? Or is there going to be a beat? My guess is he's going to continue to be the dominant player because he's had some time now to process it. We just talked about just having some time to unwind and understand exactly what happened. I do think it's interesting reading his comments yesterday, how he talked about it seems to me he's still coming to odds with the idea. He still doesn't understand how this happened. He still doesn't understand. I think the quote that he gave to Todd yesterday was, and I ended up in the back of a police car and I still don't understand how that happened. That's the end of every good movie where, yep, this is how I got here. But he has no idea. My guess is he's the same Scottie Scheffler. He's the world number one. He's the dominant player. But I'm curious.
And this was the site of the tournament last year, Rex, in which he put together one of the single greatest ball striking performances in a single tournament history, and then lost 8 or 9 strokes on the green. Absolutely dreadful. That was sort of the nadir of his putting issues, where it was becoming a weekly storyline. He was starting to bristle with some of the questions. It was sort of the dark part of Scottie Scheffler's 2023 season. There's no reason to think with this now behind him that he was going to slow down for 2024. I think I'm most curious, Rex, to see the defending champion in Victor Hovland. First time he has played, just like Xander Schauffele, since the PGA Championship. That was a very surprising top five finish for Victor Hovland, who had essentially not done anything in 2024 to this point. It seemed, now that he'd been working with Joe Mayo, that all of a sudden it was a quick fix, a switch flipped on, however you want to describe it. Golf does not seem to be that easy for most players, but I'm curious to see if it is in fact that easy for Victor Hovland, that just reuniting with the coach who launched into heights he had never experienced before is sort of the trigger, because he has so much important golf remaining in this season. You know, it feels at this point like a lost year for Victor Hovland. Still 2 major championships, still 3 playoff events, the Olympics as well, which he said that he is looking forward to participating in this year as well. There is still plenty of time for Victor Hovland to salvage a great 2024, coming off the back end when I would say that he was indisputably the best player in the world late last summer and last fall. And so I'm very curious to see if he can build off of it, which where he already has some good vibes at Mirrorfield Village. How about Xander Schauffele? What are your expectations for him as he knocks off the rust, sort of regains his regains his equilibrium after the hangover that was the PGA Championship victory? Because again, a major championship starts just 8 days from now.
Well, it goes back to what he said about how this that was a good step for him. Obviously, winning a major championship was something we all anticipated that Xander would get to eventually. However, he said that he's still got a long way to go to climb that mountain to root Scottie Scheffler. And this would be a good week for him. He's played well at Mirrorfield Village. You would think with his game, the way it was on form at Valhalla, it would transfer well over to this particular place. So you'd have to put him in, I don't know, now we're getting into tiers, so I don't want to steal that from our friend Mark Schlabel. But I think you'd have to put him in that first tier, that three or four players that you put Scottie in there. I'd certainly put Rory. He played decent at the Canadian Open, as you pointed out. And Xander right there alongside of him, because I feel like that this should be sort of that crack in the door that now opens it to something special. You know, maybe one of those type of magical runs that we see out of top players. And it, you would think that Xander would be ready to make that step, but you still have to see, because he doesn't seem to be geared like other players. You and I have talked about this before, like he kind of processes things a little bit differently. And did he spend the last 2 weeks off essentially understanding that, okay, I've reached that mountaintop and I just need to keep climbing? Or is he going to do the David Duval thing, where David Duval got to the top of the mountain, got the world number one, won the Open Championship, looked around and was like, is this really all there is? So there is a tipping point. And my guess is he keeps climbing, because that's just the kind of way Xander seems to be wired. But yeah, it's curious.
You certainly hope it's the former in that situation. I was a little taken back by when Xander Schauffele said yesterday when he met with the media on Tuesday that he just played nine holes and probably shot in the 40s. That's what leads you to believe that he had not necessarily worked on his game over the past couple of weeks. To me, that would seem like a miscalculation. I mean, this is a player who is in the best form of his life. You just hope that he can continue it, because he is such a well-rounded player. Pinehurst would be such a good fit for him. Historically, the U.S. Open has been Xander Schauffele's best opportunity to win a major. The way that his game is so well-rounded, the strengths of his game, sort of his between-the-ropes demeanor as well, is perfect for that sort of examination. You hope that he can knock off the rust and be back in that top form for the U.S. Open, but I am curious to see how he plays this week. You mentioned, Rex, the June 6th project. We are recording this on June 5th. June 6th coincides with the opening round of the Memorial Tournament. Give us a teaser. What can people expect at NBCSports.com/golf when this thing finally drops?
Well, Golf Today is going a day early, so I'll be on Golf Today this afternoon talking about June 6th on June 5th. Not quite sure the timing of that one, but we'll see. And then it was just a story that I had an idea about, and I talked to about a dozen players over the last couple of weeks. The idea being, what was your immediate reaction on June 6th? And we all kind of tell the story now. It's kind of part of the lore. Where were you when your email box dinged and you got this, the world had changed. And then how has that evolved over the last 12 months? And I got a lot of answers. First and foremost, we all kind of have an idea of what happened in that player meeting on June 6th in Canada that afternoon, after the framework agreement had been announced. Now talking with players, I think I have a little bit better understanding of why it was so contentious. Again, the reason I was talking with Matt McNeely, and his comment to me, and this will be in the story, was he felt like Jay Monahan, the commissioner, walked into that meeting expecting a friendly room. He walked into the meeting expecting that everyone would be on his side. And when he realized that it wasn't, and it was contentious, and everyone was pushing back, and it got pretty ugly.
Everyone would be on his side. He just dropped a bomb on them when they were completely left in the dark. How would they possibly be on his side?
Well, again, this is and part of this, you can sit and pick apart the mismanagement of this. And I'm always reluctant to like blame someone or point a finger, but we can all agree that the rollout of this was clumsy at best and just awful at worst, because even their own headline on their own press release talked about a quote unquote merger. And that's the word they wanted to run from immediately, because it wasn't a merger. We know a little bit more about it. You have a basic understanding of what this was. What this was is just a white flag brought up by both sides, make the lawsuit go away, and let's just start having conversations. That's a long, clumsy definition, but you probably should have gone with that in the headline, because it's been stuck by merger. To this day, you and I both do radio interviews with sports stations in Cincinnati or wherever, and they start with, where are we in the merger between the PGA Tour and LIV Golf? Well, that's not exactly what we're doing here. Like, we're not quite sure what's going to happen. So I was taken by going back to that moment on June 6th and the vitriol and just the nastiness of it all between the players and the leadership. And now how it's evolved. And I will say the vast majority of players I talk to are giving the tour still the benefit of the doubt, even a year later, even with a deadline and, you know, on December 31st that has come and gone and now seems like a distant memory. Even with all of those things, I think most players are on the side of they feel like something good is going to come from this. Now, whether if that's optimistic or sticking your head in the sand, I'm not quite sure. Only time is going to tell. But everything has evolved to the point that no one still has any answers. We don't know anything more now on June 6, 2024 than we did on June 6, 2023. But you have to have some sort of optimism that it's going to work out. But that's the exact same way they felt a year ago.
I mean, yeah, you're looking back. If you're looking forward, I think you're struck by how little progress seemingly, at least on the outside, there has been made toward a eventual or formal deal with the Saudi public investment fund. The players on the PGA Tour, if you're saying they're still giving the PGA Tour the benefit of the doubt, they have no reason not to. Their lives have been enriched in innumerable ways because of golf civil war. They're playing for more money than they ever have before. The PGA Tour is bereft of some of the star power or some of the top players, seemingly making it easier for them to succeed than ever before. There are so many more lucrative carrots that are being dangled in front of them with the signature event series, access to the major championships, trying to get to the tour championship, whatever the case may be. There is no reason for them to be mad at PGA Tour leadership right now. I understand the betrayal that they probably felt being left in the dark about the June 6th announcement. But if you look at the current status of a PGA Tour player, it has never been better. There's never been a better time, a more profitable time to be a PGA Tour player than right this instant.
I would agree with that on both sides, whether if you play for LIV or the PGA Tour. However, I would counter and say, and this is something the players simply don't do, but I think most people, at least if you're even a casual observer, you understand that this is not sustainable. Now, what's going on in golf right now, as far as from a financial point of view, from a business point of view, is not sustainable. So you're right. They love $25 million purses and the opportunity to play in events with no cuts and make a bunch of FedEx Cup points. But you can also look on the horizon and understand that we can't keep going at this pace. This isn't something that we can keep doing. There is not enough interest there to make this work. I want to read, actually, I didn't want to put words into Matt McNeely's mouth. So I'm going to read the quote that he gave me. Sitting in that player meeting, tensions were high. Guys were upset. I think somehow Jay Monahan was surprised at the reception. His remarks about June 6th were different a few months later after he saw how it was received by the players, fans, and media.
Yeah.
He's right. He's absolutely right. And like, I guess this goes back to the release. The rollout was bungled. And in this particular case, Jay walking into that meeting, we can be critical of the commissioner about a lot of different things. But the one thing that I keep coming back to is he just misread the room, literally, when it came to his own players. And this goes back years. He misread the room as far as he thought his players would stay loyal to the PGA Tour, not because of money, but because of some sort of perception that if you went to LIV Golf, that your reputation would be sullied and you would never be able to recover. And maybe that's the case, but it doesn't seem like that's the case. And now he literally, physically misread this particular room in the Canadian Open.
I think Jay Monahan and the two other deal makers with the Saudi PIF deal, I think they thought, they conflated that ending the litigation, which was costly, which was filled with plenty of venom, like that would be the overarching headline, that we have stopped this war with LIV Golf. Instead, it seemed like an act of betrayal where they were having all these clandestine meetings and you're basically now in bed with the enemy, an enemy that you had talked about for 2 years, who anyone who goes to them is immediately suspended. These are people who are not to be trusted. This is bad money. And all of a sudden now you are on the doorstep of making a deal with them. I think that is where they miscalculated. I think every PGA Tour player could agree, especially once they saw the finances, that you needed to end the litigation as quickly as possible. Instead, that was almost rendered a footnote to what the actual announcement was is that we'll potentially be partnering with the enemy that they had sort of projected over the past couple years. I strongly encourage everyone to go check NBCSports.com/golf. That's dropping on Thursday, June 6th. You can also catch Rex on Wednesday, noon Eastern time on Wednesday on Golf Today to discuss that story. We will not have, Rex, any communication issues this Sunday. We will have a recap podcast of the Memorial Tournament for you and I both turn our attention to the U.S. Open. I'll be driving up early Monday. You'll be flying early Monday into North Carolina. What do you have cooking, literally and figuratively, for the rest of the week?
Just got home from 9 days on the road. I am going to cook something, but I'm not sure what it is. And we're going to do my my birthday is coming up. Thank you very much. Appreciate you noticing that. So we're going to have a big birthday bash on Friday night. So I might make the podcast on Sunday, but we'll see.
When is your actual birthday, folks?
June 10th, which was Monday. That's right. Yeah. I expect you. And good news. Good news for all the podcast listeners. They have reunited Rex and Lav for at least 2 days next week at the U.S. Open. Is that right? On live from? I think I saw.
I believe it is 3 days. You and I will be together for our Rex and Lav song and dance with no adult supervision.
Good time.
7 or 8 minutes on Tuesday. They have 8 hours to fill. No surprise that we're getting our own segment. Wednesday, I will be on the live from desk that afternoon. And then you will be the live from early reporter on Saturday and Sunday. That means very long days for you. Cannot wait to read your stories that you'll be turning out on Sunday night after essentially a 24-hour day. I'm sure that'll be a real page turner. But yes, we will do a hit together over the weekend. I think it's always fun to do like those major pregame shows. Like it gets you set. It feels cool. I've really turned my viewpoint around. On those, I'm with you. I'll probably do something this week. It's supposed to be just absolutely blazing hot. We're supposed to go to Cumberland Island on Friday with my five-year-old who just graduated from VPK.
Instead, hey,
you know, on like the weather app where it's, you know, you'll have a sun, you'll have a cloud, you'll have a lightning strike. It literally just shows the thermometer. Like that's how hot it's going to be. That's like essentially a warning. Do not go outside. And so I'll just stick my head into my offset smoker and get hot that way. It should be a good weekend. Should be a great week of golf. The best of the best from the PGA Tour playing, in my opinion, one of the best venues on the PGA Tour. So we will definitely be back with you on Sunday night for a full recap of the Memorial Tournament. In the meantime, you guys know the drill. NBCSports.com/golf for our latest news, notes, and updates. Talk to you guys in a couple of days. Have a great rest of your week.